Welcome to another day. Welcome to another show. It is Browner and Lawhead coming to you from where we're coming to you. Jason will show
there
up.
There he is.
Southern California, Mightier 1090. We are available via podcast on the podcast during the Kaplan and Crew. We're available via YouTube under Kaplan and Crew as well. I'm John Browner. That's Jason Lawhead. And the weekend has provided us with a little something in our industry we call content. We both had Thanksgiving because I hope you all had Thanksgiving. So hope you guys all had a great Thanksgiving weekend. Hope nobody got beat up getting Black Friday sales. How was your Thanksgiving, Jason?
It was cool. You know, I was in Vegas all week, so I was right away from my wife. She was in good hands with some friends. But it was really cool because I got to spend Thanksgiving at the guy that basically owns the Laugh Factory in Las Vegas, Harry Basil, great guy. He's a lot of history in the game. He was, you know, directed and wrote for Rodney Dangerfield, but great guy. But so he had just, you know, me and Jimmy Schubert, who was working the club, and some other friends over, but John Lovitz was there as well. And that was nice. Really cool. I got to sit next to John Lovitz at dinner. And it was kind of the first time I'd ever met John. And so my junior high, the going into high school years, that was the cast. That was the SNL, Lovitz, Hartman, Farley, Sandler. Probably a lot of people argue pound for pound the best cast ever, ensemble at once with all those people. And so to hear some stories, dude, to talk to him and to have that time and that cast be so impactful to, like, when I fell in love more and more with comedy. It was cool, man. He had some awesome stories, and it was, I was lucky to be able to sit at that table if I wasn't going to be near my wife or family, you know? So how about yours, my friend? How was your Thanksgiving? Your Bears won.
Oh God, listen, I hate Thanksgiving. And I also hate watching this iteration of the Chicago Bears. You know, we didn't plan on this, but since you asked me that, now you got me pissed. I'm gonna quickly address this, and then we're gonna talk about probably one of the more shocking bits of news to drop today. Any person who has been following football this year has followed the conversation of should Justin Fields be the starter or should Andy Dalton be the starter. Unfortunately, all of you were tortured on Thanksgiving Day, right after you woke up, to Bears Lions. The Lions have the dumbest coach in the league. They have the worst roster in the league, and they've beat no one in the league. They barely tied a Pittsburgh team, which we all now know sucks. But throughout this entire time of should Andy Dalton play, should Justin Fields play, there are people out there who said Andy Dalton should be playing because Justin Fields needs to watch. Watch that?
Right.
Watch that. We're in week 12, week 11. They were in week 11. We're about to close out week 11 tonight with another terrible Monday night game. But 12, okay, we're going to close out week 12. If Justin Fields had to watch that in week 12, if that's what it looks like in week 12 of Andy Dalton, I'm good, man.
Yeah.
And y'all sound stupid. Justin Fields playing was the best thing that happened to Chicago Bears. They're not good. They're not going to win a lot of games. But as a fan, you can watch this quarterback and find out if he's got it. And through this process, we know this is the dude.
Right.
And we wouldn't have found it out if we'd have waited till week 9, because we'd have had 9 weeks of what you saw Andy Dalton doing on Thursday morning. That's pathetic. Don't tell me he threw for 300 yards. He had a touchdown, and he should have had 2 interceptions, both in the end zone. Stop it. Stop it. So, anyway,
and he was playing the Lions. And you're right. Like, Justin Fields, right now, what the Bears should be doing is losing with Justin Fields and evaluating.
If he wins some games, great. If he doesn't, fine.
And evaluating him and seeing where he needs improvement and what kind of, as you watch him lose, figure out what kind of weapons.
Right.
Study the correlation of, here's what we got to go get to make this guy successful. The more we watch that, and the more we
right
see
the plays that work for him, the plays that don't work for him, like
the players
offensively
around him. Hey, we might have to go scheme. Get a right guard from, you know, and we got to go get this. Now you can literally start putting your draft board together by evaluating what is the best fit for this guy so he doesn't keep losing. I mean, that's what makes sense
but
to me.
But y'all want to see, but we should let Andy Dalton play. Get the hell out of here. You know, something that blew everybody's top. We just spent 5 minutes talking about it. I can't even get that. Something that blew everybody's top off, mine's included, was the hiring of the USC football coach from Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley. I don't know how long this deal is. It's probably like 10 years because it's college football. They're not really worth the paper they're written on. Lincoln Riley will be leaving Oklahoma to be coaching USC. And to put this in context, Oklahoma hasn't had a coach leave their program to go coach another program since 1928. So this doesn't happen to them. But this is modern-day college football. So everything happens to everybody except for Alabama. Because if you remember correctly, 2 years ago, LSU had the greatest football team ever assembled. Their head coach is fired now. Okay? Fired. So the fact that Oklahoma's now going to the SEC, which basically is a graveyard for coaches, because if you don't beat Alabama, guess what happens to you? You get fired. I'm looking at you, Dabo Sweeney. You next, brother. You next. Georgia's fired their coach. Like every conference, every team in that conference, if I'm not mistaken, has fired their coach at some point in time in Nick Saban's tenure, probably twice. So Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma and going to USC, I think that's a great and unbelievable move. Great job by Mike Boone, who people were now wanting fired as well. What did you think of that move?
Well, I think it's a smart move by Riley because yes, it does two things. It keeps him out of the SEC in the future, right? And what it also does is it puts him in ground zero of the Pac-12 to just go get that recruiting back. I mean, if there's ever going to be a guy that can go in that's a sexy, attractive coach to go play for, a guy that, yeah, I'm going to go put up numbers, go look at Baker Mayfield, go look at Kyler Murray, go look at where these guys have gone, some of Jaylen his receivers that he's groomed through there. And for Lincoln Riley as well, we don't know exactly what's in his head, but if he's going to make a stepping stone to the NFL, if that ambition is in his sights down the road, no better place to go just leave in a heartbeat if he has to than USC either. So he's in a nice situation where, if he succeeds, he holds all the chips I want to go to the NFL? Where do I want to go? Do I get to pick my spot, pick my salary? And I can leave USC because I've already left Oklahoma, right? And you're right.
Right.
Back in the day, these types of things didn't happen in college football. You didn't make a lateral move or a move to a similar style tradition. You wouldn't go, that just didn't happen back in the day. Well, now we're at the point where, a Jimbo Fisher left Florida State and may have made, in a lot of people's eyes at the time, A&M. A sublateral move program-wise, right? I mean,
but now
Florida State to A&M, and now there's rumors he may be the guy that jumps over to LSU in a late scurry, but I don't think he will. I think he'll honor that contract at least for a few more years and try to get something out of that A&M program. But this is where we're at. And for Lincoln Riley, it's a great move to get away from Alabama and to get something cooking quickly in Southern California. And giving him the opportunity to step into that NFL role easier and with more leverage than I think going and staying at Oklahoma and not winning that title. The more years you go on and then you enter into that conference in what, 3 years, two, 3 years, I think.
Some say as soon as two.
So, for him, great move professionally. About the only reason you would ever leave Oklahoma was this reason right here.
I thought looking at the move, once he was actually available, the ability for Mike Boone to figure that out and then reach out to him and make it happen. I thought the interesting part about all this was the people who are upset in Oklahoma talking about suing. I don't know who you're going to sue, but suing, filing criminal charges about him taking the assistance. Like, let me talk. I mean, let me talk about college football for a second. To the people who brought who love Nebraska football, it's over. To the people who love football in Oklahoma, it might be over for you too. Like this, the landscape shifting the way that they are. There are going to be three conferences that matter. Mm-hmm. The SEC, the Big Ten, and whatever it becomes on the West Coast. That's going to be college football, man. That's going to be it. So if you're in Iowa or if you're in Nebraska or you're in Oklahoma, or with the exception of Texas, because that's a monster.
Even them.
They're even now a small footnote in college football. And they have one of the greatest facilities I've ever seen put together for anything. I'm talking about NASA included.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. The idea that something can't happen to your university from a football perspective, unless Nick Saban is your head coach and unless you're Alabama, it could happen to you too. You could get poached too. It goes for you, Notre Dame, because I know you think you hired in hell. The idea that these universities, these boosters, think that, oh, our guy's not going anywhere. Yeah, right. Okay. You might want to get him on the phone and get some reassurance. Because y'all would fire him as quick as he'll go somewhere else. So if I was him, when you get the chips, move him.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's where Riley at his age and his point of his career right now is why risk getting stale at Oklahoma?
Bro, would you want to be in Norman or in Los Angeles? Stop.
Exactly. It. You know, so, and with the stepping stones from there, right? Like, right. You know, this is the only time you would leave kind of a program that's rolling for a program rolling. That needs to rebuild. This is the only real scenario, this whole thing. Lincoln Riley, who he is at his age, where he has the opportunity to go from here with other, not just USC, but NFL ambitions or if he brings USC back to national, you know, championship prominence. I mean, he'll be bigger than Pete Carroll was when Pete turned it around there.
One of the things I saw on ESPN was they said that Lincoln Riley pulled over to the side of the road, got out of a Ferrari, and got into a Ferrari with the engine missing. The part that they forgot to tell you was he's the mechanic.
Yeah.
That's what they forgot to tell you.
They're giving him a real big budget to work with, meaning
right. The Ferrari he got out of, he built it, my man. And that's why he can hop into this other one on the side of the road and be zooming in that one quicker than he was zooming in the other one. So that happened, and that's crazy. But let's also talk about what we actually saw, some real football play, because this is imaginary moving chess pieces in coaching. But what we saw this weekend really probably shook the tree on a lot of people. The Rams got their hat handed to them, but most unexpectedly, which is a trend this season, the Chargers got just absolutely obliterated on the defensive line by the Denver Broncos. And that whole division now at 6-5, with the exception of the Chiefs, who are 7-4. No one knows what's going to happen. But we're going to talk about the Chargers because we'll get to the Rams and we'll get to around the NFL before we get to the end of the show, obviously. But Jason, when you look at what the Chargers had done to them, I don't want to hear anybody tell me that they had only two healthy offensive linemen. Look around the NFL, man. Nobody cares about who's hurt, who's playing. What are you doing with what you got? Because the Broncos got injuries too, and their quarterback sucks. So what did you think of what you saw from this game on Sunday?
Well, you know, the Chargers have they remind me a lot of the Browns. They have scheme and approach issues. And, you know, hey, look, guys are going to get hurt. You're going to miss an offensive lineman here, a skill position player here or there. And you're not just going to be able to roll into town or just hold home field because, you know, this is the roster you're bringing out and you've got some good players and whatever you think you have at the pass rush or, you know, at quarterback or at a skilled position or two. When you don't come scheming and the other team does, you're in for what you're going to get. And that's kind of, You know, that's where this Charger team reminds me of the Browns. It's coming, maybe a young coach getting a little too much credit too early, and maybe a young quarterback getting way too much credit a little too early. And then those two kind of things just kind of, hey, let's just roll the ball out and let the talent win football games. And this is that time of the year. You know, this is the time of the year. I liken this time of the year to like a team driving into the red zone. Anybody can move the ball between the 30s in the NFL, right? Anybody can move the ball between the 30s. What can you do once you get in? Can you get it to the red zone? And what can you do when you get it to the red zone? And, you know, that's why I liken I compare this part of the season a little bit to that. And we're starting to see teams that struggle in that area with just basing themselves off talent. And I think they've got to get back to scheming their opponents and, you know, especially in that division, like you just said, 6-5 is the worst record. Three teams have it. And, hey, the Raiders, man, give them credit. That team does not want to go away. All the challenges they've faced, that team is determined to give it all they've got to try to either win that division or make a wild card. And the Broncos look like they have that same kind of, hey, we're just not going to go away. Even though we've traded some guys and we might not like everybody we have where we have them, you know, they got off to the hot start. They look like they laid down and quit, and give Fangio credit. He's got them back there even after trading Von Miller. They got them back there. You know, Chubb just got back on the defense end of the ball. So, you know, hey, it's hard to tell who the best team in the AFC West is. Obviously, it's probably the Chiefs. But right now, it's hard to really tell who it is. But whoever it is going to have to prove it in the next 4 to 5 weeks now.
What I realized about this coaching staff is that people have their number, but everyone gets your number. Yeah. It's a part of coaching. Period. It's not a secret. Everyone will get your number when they get enough tape on you. It now appears that the league has enough tape on what the Chargers want to do with their offensive philosophy going forward. This is now, you talked about it being in the red zone. I see a bit more of as a, this is in dating. You are past the first couple dates. So the idea that you want to now go to the movies, now that doesn't work out no more, because now you're actually dating this person. Like the ideal, let's just get a drink. Oh, we'll get to know each other. No, y'all passed that. So now it's time to get in depth. Now it's time to have conversations. Now it's time to see what's up. Now it's time for the rubber to meet the road in that relationship. Right. And you getting figured out now. And that's what happened. So that's what's happening to the Chargers. They've been figured out from a coaching aspect. Do they have talented players? Absolutely. But scheme is very important for the other team to not know what you're doing, to be somewhat unpredictable, so that your players can use their talents to overdo what's on the field. Because it's action and reaction. The defense is always reacting to what the offense is doing. But if they know what you're doing, you now have to counterpunch. And now we're going to find out if he can counterpunch or not. Because they looked, on Sunday, they looked like a team that didn't know what to do once the other team knew what they were doing. And how do I know that? Because I'm a fan of the Bears, and I've been watching it for 3 years. When your coach doesn't know what to do because the other team knows what you're doing, I've seen it before, and that's what I saw again on Sunday, and that's what I found the most alarming about the game, is they look like they got figured out, and now they don't have a counterpunch.
Right, and that's the league, right? And you said it earlier about, you know, hey, teams adjust. You see a team enough times, you watch them on film, you know. Right. And it's a league of constant scheming. Why are the Chiefs back to 7-4 and in first place? Because Andy Dalton overhauled and said, we've got to start constantly scheming and doing new things on defense. It's the defense that has them at 7-4. The defense, which was part of the problem on why they started bad, is really the main reason why they're 7-4. Their offense hasn't really lit up those games that they won recently to get that momentum going. Obviously, they had the one breakout game recently, the offense did, but it's mainly because he's been in the league too long to know that if we're not constantly scheming, Bill Belichick, same thing. He's got the Patriots where they are.
Well, we're going to get to the Patriots.
Constantine.
We will get to the Patriots. We will get to a lot of the things that happened on the NFL. If we have time, we'll get to LeBron. I doubt it. We'll probably have to save that for tomorrow. But we had so many things happen over the weekend. We had so many things happen with the standings. If you look at the in the hunt, in the quote unquote playoff hunt, it's everybody except for the Jaguars and the Lions, because again, I unfortunately will revisit this again. Dan Campbell is the dumbest head coach I think I've ever seen in the history of football. And what the Fort family has done to that franchise, it is utterly embarrassing. Like, Dan Campbell, I'm not a football coach. I've never held a whistle to coach football. I've coached basketball. What I do know you can't do is call back-to-back timeouts in a football game, man. You can't do it. You're just dumb. So we'll get to that. We'll get to many other. Well, we already got to that. But we'll get to other things on the other side of this. Brown and Lawhead. Brown and Lawhead back. Second half of the show on the Mightier 1090 on YouTube, in the iTunes podcast store, all under Kaplan and Crew. But then if you're listening on the Mightier 1090, obviously you got us as you're driving in your car. Happy belated Thanksgiving. For anything that you missed, head over to, like I said before, the podcast store or YouTube. Like, subscribe, and share. I'm John Browner. I'm joined by Jason Lawhead. This is something we like to call Browner and Lawhead. Previously, we talked about what's going on with the Chargers. We talked about why the Bears suck and how dumb Dan Campbell is. We also talked about the new hire at USC and how many, what that means and what kind of waves that make. And we kind of visited the college football hiring landscape as well. The NFL is in a very unpredictable place. This has got to be great for the house. It's got to be terrible for bettors, because you have no idea who's going to do what from week to week. I have to say, I didn't think the Rams would win that game, but man, I didn't think they would lose like that. I really didn't think they would lose like that. I have a blog up on the CaplanandCrew.com or the Brown Bag blog is where I write some of the thoughts and when I get a chance to write them down. And one of them was about what we're seeing from the Rams, because when they got Von Miller, we were like, whoa. Then they got Odell Beckham Jr. It was like, whoa, star power. So you got Odell, you got Jalen Ramsey, you got Aaron Donald, you got Leonard Floyd, you got Von Miller. Football's not played like that, apparently. This ain't hoops, bruh. You can't just get the best players with the biggest names and think that it's going to work out. By the way, not working out for the Lakers either. But you can't do that, because last night, they look, I don't even know how to describe it. They got ran through, and then they got thrown over. What did you think of the game yesterday?
Yeah, I watched that in my hotel room. And, you know, for a little bit of the first half, you thought, hey, the Rams are competing in this football game. And, you know, you see some signs of the ability to, hey, maybe come out of Lambeau with a win. Or at least within that first range of the first half, you figured, hey, you know, the Packers defense has really been their MVP next to Rodgers, kind of a co-MVP all year long, the way they've stepped up. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, the Rams were actually, you know, making some good headway first half. But then their defense is kind of, Stafford's playing well for the Rams this year. I won't take that away from him, but he's not Tom Brady. He's not, you know, Peyton Manning. So that defense has to be as good as advertised if you also want Stafford to be successful. You know, Stafford is the kind of guy that is good enough to help this team win and get to where they need to go. But it's that defense that's been the big disappointment on this team. And you can blame Stafford for three straight games of pick sixes. I get it. I'm not admonishing him. But, you know, once the defense isn't stopping anybody – and a guy like Stafford feels like, man, I got to press now. We got to get points every time I touch the ball just to stay in this game. He's not that kind of quarterback. He's the kind of quarterback that, is a kind of freestyle player. But put him in the best position to win, which they did early in the season. Their defense was, you know, came out and was at least playing the football we kind of expected from them. But as the season has waned on, as you said, team scheme. They watch tape and they go, hey, we can run between the tackles on these guys, put a fullback in there, put a double tight end set, and knock them off the ball. And all they want to do is sack the quarterback and intercept the quarterback. So take that away from them.
I know here's a question, because we talked about scheme before, and I'm glad you brought that back up, because I have a question for you. At what point do you put Sean McVay on the hot seat? Because Jared Goff, it was Jared Goff's fault. Mm-hmm. It was Jared Goff's fault. Remember, we need a new quarterback to run my system, to make everything
stop
work,
on my
to make
girlfriend.
Everything okay.
I need a quarterback that's booed up.
Give me a married man who has no idea what my exactly. wife looks like. You lost three in a row now.
And the Niners again, are coming.
He's gonna be in trouble, because Stafford's numbers will never look like Goff's numbers. Stafford's numbers will always look good, because that's what he does. He tricks you into thinking that he's good with his statistically. So you look at his line, 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. That looks great. Okay. They didn't have a chance in that game if you were watching that game. And that, to me, puts me in a position where now I have to start looking at the nuts and bolts of Sean McVay. If he's got the lead at halftime, he's unbeatable. If he doesn't have the lead at halftime, he ain't going to catch up.
Yeah. Weird.
So now I need to start looking at all this. And so my question to you is, how much more of this before we start looking at Sean McVay as one of these? Because you know the owner got money. He don't care about right. that. He want to win.
I think he's going to stick with McVay. I mean, unless there's a total implosion, right? Unless this thing just goes.
Right. I'm not saying fire him tomorrow. Right. I'm saying at the end of the right. year, do you start considering him as
right.
one of those
but
guys?
I think even if, let's say they miss the playoff, what are they, 7-4? Let's say they even miss the playoffs at 9-8. I don't think he's on. I think, you know, obviously there's some, hey, Sean, you know, this was unacceptable.
What you doing,
this
bro?
Was unacceptable. Next year, I'm not accepting this. And next year, you know, I think he would, but I think that they've invested in Sean. They've invested in his ideas and they've financially and with some draft picks to say, hey, I think they're at least going to give this guy a couple of years. Does he have to start kind of answering those questions though? I mean, if his team does not get to the playoffs this year, I don't know if he's per se on a hot seat with the owner right away, but he's on a seat that's going to get warmed up by the media real quick early next year and into next year, which that owner will not be able to ignore if they're in this, you know, situation in, you know, week 6 or 7 where they're not playing the kind of football, or they're playing the same kind of football they're playing in this losing streak, let's say. So I still think they're invested in this guy. But let me tell you something. If the season comes to an end and the Niners have come around, you know, the outside turn with Jimmy Garoppolo and are in the playoffs and are the team that's going as the wild card in that division instead of the Rams, that seat guy, that could temper up really quick, yes.
I think if he looks behind him and he sees the 49ers coming and they catch him and they even tie him or pass him, I think that people in that front office will start looking around and going, wait a minute now. Because Kyle Shanahan's brand of football is not our brand of football. They're a completely yeah. different style of football, and they keep kicking our ass. And here we are. We got all these stars. We got all these guys you can recognize. I don't know who the hell's on that right. team. And here they are in the same position as we are. So what's up with that? Is it our coach? Because he seems to be able to do it with a quarterback who we all are iffy on still. We gave you the guy you wanted. You iffy too. So I am interested in seeing how this season plays out, because I didn't see the 49ers turning the switch on and doing what they're doing. And by the way, there's a lot around the league where I didn't see teams doing what they're yeah. doing. I'm going to start with the New England Patriots. When Mac Jones got drafted, I said after the first preseason game, that's the guy for them. Again, he's not the best of the rookies. That's the best guy for them, because it fits what they do. And what the Patriots always want you to do is your job. Mm-hmm. And so now we are looking at Mac Jones, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots going, wait, they're in first place? I thought Buffalo was going to the Super Bowl. Right. They have the best coach in football. And now he's got Mac Jones. I'm not saying he's Tom Brady, But statistically, look at what Tom Brady did the first Super Bowl run for the Patriots. It's not that far off. Mm-mm. All you need to do is let the defense win the game, not lose the game for you, and you just put a couple points on the board. Help me help you. And that's what the Patriots are doing. And I'm blown away by the success of the Patriots this year. I did not see this coming.
I didn't see this record right now playing like this coming. No, I liked the Mac Jones pick for them based on a lot of the reasons why I think Belichick is what he is. And you mentioned it, right? You just said that first Super Bowl, Brady wasn't that impressive, right? Like he wasn't blowing up the world, but that just shows you where Belichick, now you've got Belichick 20 years better as a coach, right? Mm-hmm. 20 more years experience from that first time he won it with Tom. So he really knows kind of how to polish, you know, a cubic zirconium into a diamond a little bit more than he did even 20 years ago. So he sees, and we talked about this when the Patriots and Browns played. What I love about Mac Jones and the Belichick thing, as you see it get better, you're seeing, I'll touch on it again, you're seeing a quarterback and a coach live equally in reality, whereas I think like Stefanski and Baker are living in a delusion of what he can do. And the Patriots stay sound. Mac stays sound on, hey, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do any more than I know I can, and we're going to play within my limitations. And if everybody does that and we do our job, like you said, and everybody does their job, they're going to win football games. And here they are. And here they are. And here are teams like, you know, the Browns sitting here going, hey, we think Baker Mayfield can make plays like Lamar Jackson. So let's go get him sacked and fumble the football away and get his foot broken and, you know, his shoulder sprained. So that's the most impressive thing. And if that thing keeps continuing, that train keeps rolling, the Patriots with that defense and some of these guys that have stepped up, the way they went out and spent money in the offseason to get the position, mm-hmm. they did everything that the Rams thought they did, but like you said, the Rams right. kind of just put individuals together and expected them to be this great basketball team. That was a great comparison that you said. It's just like, you can't just, hey, just because you got a DB, an outside linebacker, a defensive end, and they're all probably one of the tops at their profession, doesn't mean they're going to come together as an 11-man unit.
It's nine other mm-hmm. guys out. It's eight other guys out there, man. And they are not firing on the cylinders that they need to. And speaking of not firing on cylinders, the Ravens got some of the gross. Ugliest wins of the year. Like, I mean, just unwatchable, disgusting wins. They got them.
It's unbelievable.
They got them. But I don't know what the Browns are doing. I mean, because if we look at it, remember – to start the season, the Ravens won an overtime game against Las Vegas that no one wanted to win. The Ravens just so happened to win that game. They beat the Lions on a 66-yard field goal. Nobody – that was gross. They beat the Bears with Lamar Jackson out. That was a gross game. And then we visit this game we just got through watching them play against the Browns. I don't know what more needs to happen for people to just kind of accept that Baker Mayfield is, again, below Kirk Cousins in that area. He's not a franchise quarterback. He's the guy that if you get me everything, I can take you places. Okay? If you get me a car, I can be the steering wheel. But I can't be the engine, the exhaust pipe, the steering wheel, the clutch, the turn signals. I can't be all that. The brakes. That's not who he is. And I think the Browns, like you said, they're operating in a delusional space mm-hmm. as to where they think that this guy is John Elway. Yeah.
And it's starting to really work on me. I was really big on Stefanski, but the more and more I watch him, the more and more I feel like he's just clutching to this idea that, you know, I made a tweet last night when Lamar made that backpedal play, and then he got away from Clowney, Garrett, and whoever else was coming at. And he threw that long pass, the only touchdown they scored, that long pass Andrews. That the receiver came from the back of the end zone to slide to get. I tweeted, I go, you know, Baker could never make that play, but that's not the problem. The problem is Stefanski and Baker both think he can make those kind of plays. And that's where the Browns are suffering. I mean, you got a guy with turf toe or a bad heel or a bad shoulder, then why are you rolling him out? Why are you dropping him back so much? And the thing was, is they abandoned the run in a, what, 3-0 game, 6-3 game?
Yes.
And you know, the, yes. Yeah, we weren't getting a lot early off the run, but that Nick Chubb has done nothing but prove if you keep giving me the ball and we don't abandon this thing, come the fourth quarter, our offensive line, we're going to wear spots down on this defense, and we're going to get holes, and we're going to get our 6, 7, 8, and snap off some first down runs here eventually. But you can't give the guy 5 rushes and then sometime in the fourth quarter try to say, okay, let's try to establish a running game. I mean, Hunt and Chubb had 5 carries each going into those final 2 drives.
One of the things that aggravated me about what's happening with the Rams and Sean McVay and what I keep seeing week after week happening in Cleveland, and by the way, in Dallas, because let's touch on all 3 of those teams and then from this perspective. If they're not running the ball, what made you successful and what got you the attention was running the ball. Your passer, the guy who you have in that position, isn't good enough for you to go 5 rushes for you, 5 rushes for you. He ain't that guy. Dak Prescott ain't that guy. Baker Mayfield ain't that guy. You, with those 2 backs, one of them will break a 40-yard run.
Yes.
One of them will break a 30-yard run.
Yes.
But they can't if you don't turn around and give them the ball.
And you can't set up play action. You can't set up even
right.
little dump screens to these guys after that.
Nothing.
So you're literally not just abandoning the run, you're abandoning them for being any more helpful to you, even in play action or picking up a block in play action. It doesn't go to them. They pick up a block on a blitz linebacker, and you still have all day to throw up the sideline. Like, or you're not allowing them to
develop. Or from a check down perspective, you got these guys for check downs too.
Yeah. I mean, just lined up in formation. I mean, you know, moving them into motion, putting them in the slot, showing different looks. I mean, And then we, you know, we go and, you know, you're going to get cute against the Ravens. You can't even move the ball. You're going to go put Landry in. And the only reason Landry scored last week against the line, that was a broken play. He didn't even know what to do. When you go look at that same play they ran for a touchdown against the Lions when Landry ran it in, that was a broken play. It was a broken play. He moved. It was just lucky that the Lions were so freaking bad that they couldn't even pick up the fact that it was a broken play and take Landry down. So yesterday against the Ravens, who aren't the Lions mentality, they saw that go. That was another broken play. Nothing developed, and he fumbles the ball away. one snap. Jarvis Landry. Oh. One time behind center, they fumbled the ball away. On a drive, we were moving the football on that drive. Same drive when Baker went back and got set. So I'll just say this about the Baker Mayfield situation, is that in the last 12 quarters of football, this team has scored 30 points. And I don't care what team you are, who your quarterback is. If you've scored 30 points in 12 quarters, you have major issues to address. That's the bottom line. And if the issues aren't the quarterback, I can't find. Look, at the end of the day, it's time to sit him down, and you have a great chance right now going into the bye week to use the bye week and his health. We're not benching him, even though I think we should bench him. The narrative doesn't have to be that. The narrative can be, look, we're 6-6. We're 1-0 with Case Keenum. So we're going to go to Case after the bye week against Baltimore at home, because we're going to let Baker rest and heal through this bye week and be on the sidelines healing more and there to just come in if there's a, you know, emergency situation.
Emergency. But I think he's got too many injuries.
He does.
Keep running him out there. I really think that there at some point being a warrior is ineffective if you cannot execute at the level in which you were known to become that warrior. Fighting through injuries, yeah, at some point it becomes you're being stupid. And the Browns coaching staff, they've got to be looking at these tapes and going, look, man, Keenum can make these throws, right? And Baker can too, but right now he can't because he's hurt. So put in a healthy guy who is maybe half of Baker, but Baker's not even half of himself right now.
Case Keenum,
and so until we do that, we're going to keep getting these same results.
Case Keenum is the highest paid backup quarterback in the league. What the hell you paying him all that for? If this isn't the type of situation that you go, Case, go take the keys. Let this guy's foot get better. Right. You know, let some of the, you know, just the bad mojo out at this point.
Get us home. Get us in a game like that. Somebody should have put Keenum in, say, hey, man, we're going to tell everybody Baker's hurt. That's why he sucks. Put Keenum in, see what happens. Because if you can't, all you need was a touchdown in that game. For the majority of that game, all you would need was a touchdown. Because you know what they would have done also if they'd put Keenum in? They'd have tried to run the ball more effectively. Because now they would.
Of course they would have. And they would have run the ball, and they would have run the dump screens. They would have said, let's not put pressure on this guy to have to send it downfield or go hit, right. You know, Peoples Jones or Njoku Long if we don't have to. Let's run it. Let's find Hunt on the dump screens on the little outs, and let's try to move chains that way and make it easy on Case. And
but that's what made Baker successful. So why don't they do that when he's in the game? It's beyond me.
I'm really perturbed at how hard-headed Stefanski is right now. And you know, I think he's costing this team games. I really do. And you look at the rest of the schedule. I mean, if this is the way we're going to do this, like I just said, 30 points in 12 quarters. I mean, here's the five we've got left. First off, Cincinnati ain't going to let us do that again. That was that one bad game they had for their year, probably.
And after what they just did to Pittsburgh, they're going to be ready.
Baltimore again. The Raiders, this Browns team can't beat this Raiders team right now. And the Packers, those are the five. This team could lose these five. I mean, these games, some of them are winnable. I won't say all of them. Some of them are winnable, but all of them are very losable with the way this team's playing.
And we'll find out more tomorrow on Brown and Lawhead.